I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Gut Glow Podcast. Following a cancer diagnosis in my 30s, my goal is to inspire and empower people on their self-care journey. Through the conversations I have with my guests, we hope to do just that.
There is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, this is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial.
Although I went through a tough time, it showed me how someone could still love me at my lowest and at my weakest, because the love before was easy, but the love at my lowest was real.
So deep down, we all know what we want in life. We all know what makes us happy. We all know the life we dreamed about. And deep down, we all know what we're capable of if you only give yourself permission to do it.
I now live a healthy and fulfilled life where self-care is a top priority and every day is an opportunity to grow. This season of the Gut Glow Podcast is brought to you with thanks to Ireland's leading pharmacy chain, Lloyds Pharmacy. Whether you're looking for advice or support with allergies, pregnancy, vitamins, or skincare, their highly trained teams can make it easier for you and your family. Visit lloydspharmacy.ie for all your healthcare and well-being needs. Lloyds Pharmacy. Say hello to the people that know. This week on the Gut Glow Podcast, I'm joined by someone who I admire greatly, Eve McDowell. In 2019, Eve became a victim of stalking. Her stalker was jailed after months of following her and breaking into her home. Today, Eve speaks to me about what she went through, how she rebuilt her life, and how it's taken her on a new path. In her recovery, Eve was shocked to discover that there's no specific law against stalking in Ireland and could find very little information or relevant advice online. She went on to create stalkingireland.ie with Una Ring, and together they are doing some incredible work to make change. Eve's strength is so admirable. I can't even imagine what she went through, but she's determined to use her experience for good. Just a warning, there may be parts of this podcast that you may find distressing. And if you think you are a victim of stalking, please make sure to call the Gardaí. Eve, welcome to the Gut Glow Podcast. I'm here in Sligo today. I'm so happy to finally meet you after following your story over the last while. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks so much for coming down.
I wanted to, to first start with a question just about you and how you are, because I'm sure it must be a hard thing to talk about. And do you feel comfortable now discussing this? Have you, you know, was that a hard decision for you to make to almost go public with this story?
Initially, it was a difficult decision to make. Yeah, because, you know, even back in court, I wasn't comfortable reading my victim impact statement myself. So, you know, coming from that to this, I think what motivated me to do that was the need for awareness. I just realised there was no proper awareness around stalking. I really thought my case was a once-off bizarre incident. But then once I heard about Una Ring's case, and recently we've, you know, more have come to light, it makes it worth it. And, you know, it proves that it's working, you know, that we're here and there's more conversations about it. So it was important to come forward and, yeah, to speak about it.
Because you're so young and, you know, you've got your whole life ahead of you. What helped you make the decision to go public, or like how long, you know, was it a case of it took a number of months to get to that point, or counselling, or how did you reach that point?
Yeah, it was a combination of a couple of things. I think counselling was definitely important. You know, I was in counselling for nearly a year before I was able to come out and talk about it. And then seeing Una come out and talk about her story was so inspirational that, you know, when I seen her, I just said, OK, I want to be able to do that as well.
I am excited to talk to you about what yourself and Una are doing and the difference you're making. And we'll get to that. But let's go back to the last few years and how the stalking began.
Yeah, so I suppose it was May 2019 is when it really began. I had known this guy when I went to college. He was in the same college accommodation as me, and Galway's very small, so you do get to know people quickly. We weren't friends or anything, more so acquaintances. We had friends of friends and we'd end up in the same social situation sometimes, but never had one-on-one conversation. Then I didn't finish my first year of college, but I stayed on working in Galway and I began working in a clothes shop the following September. And he used to come in a lot and buy clothes from there all the time. And there'd be a bit of conversation just at the till about the weather, general stuff like that. And then he seemed to go off the radar for a few months. I didn't see him. And didn't think much of it until one day I spotted him walking past the shop and looking in as opposed to coming in. And he just walked past a couple of times, which I found strange. And that went on for a few weeks. But I, you know, just thought, right, okay, he's not shopping here anymore. He must be shopping somewhere else. Didn't pass too much heed. And then there was one day I was in work and, yeah, finished up. I went a little after work, sorry. And I was coming out with my food shopping and I just seen him looking over the wall. So I kind of went over to approach him and ask him, you know, what he was doing or whatever. But he ran behind the garage beside Lidl. And I just thought, that's okay, that's strange. Surely there's a reasonable explanation for that.
And did you feel at that point that he was looking at you, or were you kind of... were you thinking there was that this was a coincidence at the time, or had you started to become concerned at this point?
There was a little bit of concern in me, yeah. Yeah, because it was strange. You know, sometimes you just have that feeling that something doesn't sit right with you, but try and reassure yourself that it's coincidence because, you know, surely he's not there for me. You know, you think you kind of bring yourself around to that frame of thought again. But then I was getting a key off my friend who was at a house in an estate beside mine. And I told her about the incident, just said it was a bit strange. And, you know, she reassured me, surely he was just there meeting someone or something like that. So I left. And then as I was coming around the corner, he was standing there again. And I just got a bit of a fright then because he wasn't saying anything. You know, his head was shaking over and back and he looked distraught nearly himself. I just like said, oh, how's exams going? Because everyone was doing exams at the time. And he just ran away. So I was like, okay, that's very strange now. And then, I started telling people about it then just to keep an eye out and ask them, had they seen him and stuff like that? And no one else had seen him around as much as I had, which started to make me concerned then.
And Eve, did you live by yourself or what was your living situation?
No, there was three other girls in the house, yeah. But I hadn't moved into that house too long. Like I had only been a month or two in the house maybe. So I didn't know the girls too well, but I kind of mentioned it casually, I think, to one of them.
But, and what sort of language were you using around that time? Because you probably weren't saying stalking.
No, definitely not. It was like, until it got very serious, I didn't name it as stalking because I didn't know much about stalking, hadn't heard of it, any cases in Ireland, didn't think it was a thing that happened outside of movies and America, you know. So I just, yeah, I think he's following me, or someone said peeping Tom one of the last days.
Right. So talk us through then. So you saw him at Lidl and then you saw him outside your friend's house. So what happened next then?
Then there was one day I was in work and from about 9:30, I seen him outside the shop and I just thought, right, okay, that's strange that he's in town this early. And then I went on my lunch with another one of my friends and I was telling him about it and we went to a burrito place and then he was like, oh, look, there he is. He was outside the window. But, you know, just very casually walking past as opposed to looking in. So in my mind as well, I was like, is this actually happening? Am I imagining this? Am I just running into him? And then we were in our square eating lunch and I seen him again. And then I went back to work and one of my friends called in about 4 and she said, look, he's sitting outside on a bench. And I was like, okay, that's really weird now. This has been going on since 9:30 this morning. And then after work, I went and I met my friend in a pub in our square. I was telling her about it. And then literally maybe 5 minutes later, she was like, oh my God, look, there he is. And when I turned around and looked at him, he just ran out. Which again, I was like, it's weird because he wasn't making contact with me and he wasn't coming up to me and asking me or talking to me. So it made it very hard to pinpoint what was actually going on. And then, yeah, after a while, I just said, look, I don't feel comfortable here. Can we move pubs? So we did. And we got a place with the window seat. A couple more people joined us and we could see him walking up and down for about half an hour just walking up and down outside that pub. It was like he was waiting for me to come out or something. And then after that, we went to McDonald's. And then jokingly, I was like, look, watch now. He'll show up here and he bets. And he did. And at that point, me and one of my friends went to confront him. And he ran down a side street off of Shop Street. And I stopped at the top of the street. And my friend ran down. And, you know, we thought he had got away. But then she screamed because he was crouched down behind a car. And she was like, what are you doing? Why are you following Eve? And he got up and just put his finger to his mouth and went shh. And he ran away laughing, which really, you know, that was really alarming because I was like, right, that's sadistic, you know, very scary. And I kind of shouted at him, you're not doing a great job of hiding. I can spot you a mile away with that beard, because he had a very distinctive beard. And then I asked her and another friend to walk me home. So we were walking home and then he showed up again on the walk home. He was just like hopping in and out of the bushes off of the road, which was just, I couldn't get over what was happening. It just like didn't feel real at all. And then we spent like half an hour, 40 minutes outside of the estate looking out for him, because I didn't want him to know where my house was, when in reality he probably knew where it was already. So then, yeah, even after that I didn't call the guards. I was still unsure of myself and thought that, you know, maybe he'd go away.
You were doubting yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big time. I don't know why. Looking back on it now, I'm like, wow, it was right in front of me the whole time. And I suppose you don't want it to be real as well. You don't actually want it to be happening. And again, because I hadn't heard of any other cases or anything, I just was like, surely this isn't happening, you know?
And did you feel like you were in danger?
Yeah, from that point, I felt like I was in danger, because it, just his behaviour and his reaction to my friend finding him, I just found that very strange. Then there was a couple of days later, I stayed at my friend's house that was in the estate beside mine, and I came back to our house. It was like 9:15 in the morning. Usually we'd always lock the door at night, but during the day we'd leave it open if we were coming and going. But something about this day now, I said, I'm going to lock this in case. And then I went into the kitchen and put on the kettle. I was coming back out into the hall and I looked at the frosted glass beside the door, and there was just a figure standing there. And then the door handle tried to open and I just thought, what, that's strange. So I stood there for a second, but then the doorbell rang. So I thought, OK, maybe it's a postman, because I didn't recognise the figure at all. I was like, well, it's not him. And then I opened the door. The keys were on the radiator beside the door, opened it, and there was no one there. And there were steps up to our house, at least 15 steps, and you know, that was scary. I was like, who would have gone down that fast, or where did they go? I was looking around and I couldn't see anyone. So at that point I texted into the house group chat and I said, hey guys, was anyone expecting anything or expecting anyone? I explained what had been happening. I said, okay, I think this guy has been following me and I'm starting to get a bit concerned now. And then my housemate Aoife came down and we were just in my room, and she was like, God, what's happening? Tell me about this. And then she looked out the window and she just screamed and fell back on my bed. She was like, who is that? Who is that? And I looked down and he was in the bushes below the bedroom window with his hair shaved off, his eyebrows shaved off and his beard shaved off, which I just was, you know, I was shocked, speechless. Like, I think I just froze. I didn't know how to react, especially because I had said to him, I can spot you a mile away with that beard, a couple of nights beforehand. When he did that, I was terrified. Yeah. So at that point, I rang the guards.
You see, you rang the guards then?
Yeah.
And what did he do when he saw you looking out the window?
Again, he just kind of froze and shook a little bit and ran away. It was a very strange reaction. You know, he knew that I could see him and he'd kind of wait a second and then he'd run off, which was terrifying for me, because you don't get a chance to confront someone. And even, you know, it's hard to confront someone as well when you're so petrified, you just freeze. They came and they said, the guards, they said, look, we'll have a talk with him and we'll caution him.
So you knew his name. Did you know where he lived? Could you tell the guards that kind of information about him?
Yeah, I knew the student accommodation that he was living in, because he was still in college. Yeah. Yeah. And then.
So they said they'd go and have a chat and
yeah.
tell him to back off.
Yeah. And at that point, they said, look, be careful walking anywhere on your own. Just maybe have someone with you at all times, which was very frustrating for me because I always would have considered myself really independent. But then when you can't even go to the shop on your own or finding people to walk you to and from work, like even my friend Liam, I always remember he got up and walked me into work on his birthday early. And, you know, of course, you remember the people that helped out during that time. But it was so awful having to kind of ask people, how do you mind walking me to the shop so I can get bread? You know, little things like that. Yeah, so I ended up taking a week off. I think I had holidays to take anyways, so I came home to Sligo for a while just to get a break from it.
And Eve, did you tell your parents?
I hadn't told them at that point, no. No, I hadn't. I didn't tell my mum until it was going to the High Court. And I didn't tell my dad until the next incident. I suppose I didn't want to worry them.
Yeah.
I didn't want to have to leave Galway either. I was worried they were going to say, right, get home now, you know. But yeah, I just kept it fairly quiet. So yeah, I was home for a while. And then even like, I just remember going for a walk up the country road and still looking behind me, looking over the shoulder and still obsessively checking the locks at night and stuff like that. So yeah, I realised then that it had taken a big toll on me mentally because I was away from, you know, he wasn't going to find me there. I was out of the city and still I just didn't feel safe. It's that feeling of not feeling safe. And because, you know, sometimes you'd be walking somewhere and you'd get a little bit anxious and you'd look behind you to see if there's anyone there just to reassure yourself. Like, imagine that, but that there was actually someone there and happening repeatedly over the space of a couple of weeks. It's just, yeah.
And at that point, did you know about location services? Were you checking things like that?
Like on apps and stuff, yeah. Is it? Yeah, like at that point I did then. I put all my accounts on private as well and I found his accounts and blocked him so that he wouldn't be looking at mine, because cyberstalking is another huge thing that we're seeing at the minute. We've had loads of emails about it and I'm trying to educate myself on it. Because, you know, it's not something that I've had to deal with before, thank God, or not that I know of. But I think, and I've been reading up on the psychology behind stalking and behind stalkers as well. And with things like social media, it's not fair to say to victims or to people in general that your account should be on private so that people aren't looking at your stuff all the time. But I think I just felt that if I left my accounts open and left it there for him to be looking at all the time, I worried that his fixation would grow stronger, because stalkers, they do become completely fixated and they usually, like in a lot of cases, they end up losing their jobs because it takes over their life, the obsession. Like someone described it as a morbid infatuation. I just thought that was a good term for it. But yeah,
so when you speak about cyber stalking, mm-hmm. people could be getting stalked online and have absolutely no idea. Does cyber stalking then turn into physical stalking?
Yeah, in some cases it does. In some cases it does. And then like if you have cyber stalkers that are really tech savvy, they can end up hacking people's accounts and stuff like that, which is even more terrifying because then they're looking at their messages, they're looking through their emails. Like I've had some women contacting me off of like different email addresses that they're using temporarily because theirs is constantly getting hacked by, you know, this someone doing this to them.
And is there signs? How would you know if you're getting cyber stalked?
I suppose if you know the way sometimes if you log into an account, your email will notify you.
Yeah.
I suppose if you start seeing suspicious activity like that.
Okay.
And there is precautions that you can take, like downloading antivirus software and things like that. But it's an area that we don't know much about still. An area where I think a lot of work needs to be done and it needs to be looked at, because I know there is some like Coco's Law and stuff like that would have covered cyber abuse to an extent. But yeah, it can lead to other things like identity theft and things like that. So yeah, it's another, that's a whole other area in itself.
Yeah, God. So you went home just for a week, was it?
Yeah, yeah, just to clear the head, I think. And then when I came back, I got my friend to meet me off the bus and we went for a pint and kind of tried to chill out, and there was no sign of him. So he walked me back to the house and he sat with me until my ex at the time finished work. And then he came over and we said we'd go and get food. And I was like, look, well, we've walked back from town this way, so can we go this way through the NUIG campus? You know, I was very, I became, like, I'd get irritated really easily if someone just wanted to go. And, you know, it changes your personality nearly, because I'd be like, no, yeah, I can't walk that way because I walked that way earlier. And so, yeah, we had to take a detour and we went through the NUIG campus. And I just remember my ex taking my hand and saying, keep walking, don't look, don't look. And I turned around and he was there again. And yeah, we went for food. And I just, again, like, my ex is trying to reassure me, look, he didn't seem to be behind us. Maybe it was a coincidence. Maybe he is going to stay away. Don't be too worried about it. And maybe that was a coincidence when we seen him there. But when we were walking back to the estate then, as we came in, I seen him in the bushes at the house opposite our house. You know, he later said to the guards that that's where he used to sit, because, and he even said himself that, you know, you can see every way in and out of the estate from that point, and you can see there's a straight line to my bedroom window. He came forward and said that himself, which was terrifying.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Did you feel like, although you had your friends, your amazing friends around you supporting you and helping you get to and from places, it must feel quite like a lonely experience, almost like you're trapped?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because you spend, like, I was awake nearly all night as well, like getting very little sleep. You don't have much of an appetite. Work was my safe space at that time. I just threw myself into work and it was the one place I felt that I could temporarily switch off. But then at the same time, I'd have to go into the stock room and take a few minutes to myself, because you do start thinking that you're seeing them everywhere, then anyone that might look remotely like them. And you're on such high alert as well. Your senses are just heightened. Your head's jotting like that constantly. So I suppose work was my safe space. And I had, you know, my mind could, it was the only place I think at that time that I could take my mind off of things.
Because it was a public space, you just felt safe because there was people around.
Yeah, I think so. And it was in a shopping centre and, yeah, I had people around and I had the stock room, which had a keypad to get in, things like that. And everyone there knew, and the security guards in the shopping centre knew, and we had an external security company in the shop anyways. So I felt somewhat more protected there than anywhere else.
I'll get straight back to that conversation. But first, I wanted to thank Lloyd's Pharmacy for supporting The Good Glow. Lloyd's Pharmacy offer a range of services, including blood pressure measurement, BMI checks, emergency contraception, skin analysis, and an express prescription service. One-to-one private consultations are available with pharmacists or with their highly trained health coaches or skin consultants. Many of their pharmacies are open late and on weekends. For a full list of services and great offers, head over to lloydspharmacy.ie.
And like, when you were, say, in bed, you said that you found it hard to sleep. Were you wondering if he was outside your house?
Yeah. Yeah. All the time. You kind of sit there and any little noise, you're like, oh my God, is that him outside? If the bushes move with the wind, you think that's him. And you start imagining him down there because you've seen him there before. Like, I had the curtains at, like, going across my window all the time. And then I had an extra layer. I had like a bed sheet up as well. And that didn't come down till months after the sentencing, I'm pretty sure. You know, I kept that up a lot of the time because I just feared so much people being able to see me through the window.
And it's so, like you said, the toll that must have taken on your personality. On you're a young, beautiful girl off living in Galway with her friends. How did you get your head around that?
Well, it was hard because I became kind of isolated from my friends a bit as well at that time, because I didn't want to be walking anywhere, especially in the dark. Spent a lot of time at home or with my ex, so, or in work. It's weird because when I think back to it, a lot of that time I can't remember. It's nearly like my brain switches off a little bit, because I was so exhausted all the time because you're not sleeping, you're not eating properly. I was drinking a lot of wine to get through it as well.
Yeah.
We all have our crutches. And like, I suppose counselling was great for me at that time. It kept me sane through it all.
So it all came to a head. Was that long after the incident of seeing him in the bush across the road?
No, it was only a few days later. No, sorry, it wasn't even. It was that. So called the guards then, and they came and they took statements then. That's when they took them. And two of my friends came over and they took statements off them, and they were there till 11:30 at night. I just remember thinking in my head, like, they can't do anything until something worse happens. And that's terrifying, because you just feel like a sitting duck at that point. You're just waiting for something worse to happen in order to feel safer, which is so hard to wrap your head around that. And felt so helpless and vulnerable. And yeah, just that night, I didn't sleep at all. I was awake all night. Remember seeing the light kind of creeping in a little bit then, and I was like, God, I've worked now and I haven't slept again. But I kept thinking I could hear footsteps going up and down the steps, and was again trying to reassure myself, look, he's probably not there. But I do think it was him, because at about 10 to 7, I got up and went to the bathroom because it was a bit bright out then. So I got the courage to do that. Like, even back then when I was taking showers, I'd have to get my ex to stand outside the bathroom and watch the door because I didn't feel safe in the shower on my own. It takes over everything. And then my housemate was sleeping on the couch because she had forgot her bedroom key. And she heard me get up, and that woke her up, and she was really warm. So she went over and she opened the balcony door for a bit of air, and she was just lying there. And as she was drifting back to sleep, she heard the floorboards creak, and she looked up and he was standing there. He was halfway across the sitting room. He was standing there, and then he ran towards her with a hammer, and he swung for her with the hammer. He tried to hit her over the head, and she managed to put her arms up and block the hit, and it knocked the hammer out of his hand. I think he panicked then, and he ran and he jumped off the balcony. She came out to the hall. She was screaming. Like, at that point, I was pushing furniture up against the bedroom door. I thought he was coming down for me. I was like, right, this is it.
Oh my God, Eve. Yeah.
Opened the door, and she was standing there with the hammer. And I was like, is he gone? Is he gone? And we went, and my housemate came down from upstairs, and she was white as a ghost as well. The other housemate was away, luckily. But there had been no one living next door to us as well for like 2 months, I think. So we weren't used to hearing noise next door. And it just so happened the landlord and his son were in doing something in the house at that time. So we thought that he had gotten in again and that he was upstairs. So we were still waiting on the guards to come, and we were all piled into my room, pushing furniture up against the door, just listening out to see where he was and looking out the window to see where the guards were. But also being afraid to look out the window at the same time. And, you know, you just don't know what angle he was going to come from.
And how long did it take? Did you ring and say there's someone trying in our house with a hammer?
Yeah, we all tried the station and couldn't get through, so ended up calling 999. And then someone felt like a lifetime, but I'd say they were down within 10 minutes. Then they came down and they said, right, okay, we're going to go and look for him. I was kind of like, don't leave. So we just stayed in the room then until we got word from them again. I think they came back another 20 minutes later and said, look, we got him. We found him crawling up the road behind the estate. And that's when we found out that there was scaffolding set up a couple of balconies down that had apparently been there for over a week. So he must have been using that to gain access to our balcony and be looking in there into the kitchen and stuff, which was terrifying. It's not something I had thought of. Because you go through every possible situation in your head before it happens. But, you know, that was just something that I didn't think would have been possible for him to. You know, apparently he had taken it from a building site from the other side of the city. So it's strange to think that someone could just walk through the city with two pieces of scaffolding and set it up on a balcony and no one would notice.
So he set it up?
Yeah, yeah, he did.
So what do you do that day, like after that incident? What did the rest of your day look like?
I was supposed to be in work at 12, and I rang and I asked, can I go in early? I just went into work.
You went to work, Eve?
Yeah, yeah. Because again, it was kind of where I felt safe, and just the thoughts of sitting in that house after what had happened, I couldn't do it. But looking back now, I should have taken time off work then, because maybe, you know, a couple of months down the line, then I crashed hard and had to take more time off, because you're trying to suppress everything at the time to cope with it, but it always ends up coming out eventually. Because he applied for, he's been in custody since then, but he applied for bail so many times, and then every time he does that and every time he appeals that, I was having to go to court again and sit there and have to live through the whole thing again and sit in the same room as him. It's awful.
Oh my God. I can't believe you went to work that day. You must have been in just complete shock.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was just like, can I be in the stock room on delivery?
Yeah.
Probably made a load of mistakes, but yeah, just wanted to be somewhere else, just to escape the, you know,
yeah,
try and get a bit of normality back in.
So how much were you being kept in the loop about his whereabouts at this point? Like that night when you went home, did you feel safe?
Well, yeah, we had a few calls saying that, because I think they can only hold them for a certain amount of time with questioning and stuff like that. But the detective in charge of the case was confident that, you know, he was going to be held in overnight. And then it was the next day I was ringing again to see. But he said, no, look, I don't think he's going to get out on bail, which was reassuring. But yeah, every time again, then when the court cases come up, you're like, God, what if he gets out this time?
Were you able to kind of sleep at this point? Or
no.
You were traumatised?
Yeah, absolutely. I never liked the idea of taking medication either to cope with it. But I think about a week later, my dad had already booked a trip to Albufeira with me and my sisters and his partner and her daughter. So, you know, I was like, right, okay, this might be nice to actually get out of the country. But even over there, I couldn't sleep. Like there was a balcony on my bedroom and the door wouldn't lock. And I just had a tantrum. I was like, no, I can't. I can't. And Dad was like, look, it's like 8 floors up. He won't get up here. And I was like, that's what I thought before.
Yeah.
So, you know, just really, even though he was locked away in Ireland at that point, I was in Portugal in my mind going, but what if he gets out and knows that I'm over here and comes up here, you know? Your thinking just starts going all over the place, I think, as well, because you're so low on sleep. But I think eventually then I ended up taking half a sleeping tablet and slept for like 14, 15 hours straight. And I really needed that. And there was times then where I did end up only a couple of times, yeah, kind of taking the odd sleeping tablet just to get a night's sleep in. But they make you so groggy then the next day. So
yeah,
I tried to stay away from all that. But it is difficult. You're trying to do meditation and things like that to fall asleep, but it's hard to find something that works.
Yeah. Because like, it's even when you say, you know, he was in custody, but you still can't sleep because you are so used to seeing him pop up everywhere. So of course you're going to be, you know, still expecting that.
Because your body's on such high alert. And I was like, I was researching the polyvagal nervous system theory recently. And it's like, it was a saying that, you know, when you've experienced trauma, your brain can tell you that you're safe, but your nervous system will still react as if there's a danger nearby. So that fight or flight instinct kicks in. And you're on an adrenaline rush all the time and your senses are just heightened when you go through trauma as well. So I think that for people that have experienced trauma, learning about why your body is doing the things that it's doing is actually something that really helps in the healing process, because you're like, okay, yeah, my heart's beating and I'm not sleeping and I think there might be someone outside. Instead of trying to convince yourself there's no one out there, stop, you're acting ridiculous. You know, it's actually educating yourself as to why your body's doing that. And, you know, that in itself then is nearly more reassuring because you're starting to understand yourself and what you've gone through more.
It's so true what you say there, because I do think when you understand like what you say, what's going on inside, it can really help. So that's such good advice for people. Mm-hmm. He was sentenced to, he's not getting out until 2023,
yeah.
I think you said.
Yeah.
How did you feel around that time? Like, do you had to go and see him again?
Oh, well, see, the sentencing was adjourned a couple of times as well, which was really frustrating. And then you had COVID happening on top of that. So that support in court was gone. I remember what was initially supposed to be the first sentencing. It was during COVID and my dad came down for it and we went to the gates of the door of the courthouse and they said, look, you can't have anyone in with you. And that was heartbreaking. And then I went in and my stalker's father was sitting in the courtroom and that was infuriating for me. It was so upsetting. I just felt like it was so unfair. Just felt like there's very little support for victims through the whole process. And that was just a kick in the teeth after everything. You know, it's little things like the fact that, like Una pointed out before, that you go into the courtroom and sometimes they could be as little as 6 inches away from you. And it's like no one in the room understands how terrifying that is for a victim, and not just of stalking as well, like other victims of other crimes. Obviously, like imagine a victim that's gone through rape and having to go and see their rapist just a couple, like a metre from them. But he was sentenced to 7 years with 2 suspended and then 5 years for harassment. The 7 was aggravated burglary. Because he kind of claimed that the reason he was coming into the house was to get money or something. So, which I just don't think was the case.
So were you ever given that was the only explanation he ever gave?
Yeah. Yeah, it was that he wanted to get money from us. And then that's when I found out that there was no law against stalking, because although there is parts of the harassment bill that covers some stalking behaviours, I just think it's so important that stalking should be recognised as a law in this country, not just for, you know, firstly for the validation for victims of what they've experienced, but secondly because, you know, a harasser and a stalker, they have much different intentions.
So what's the difference?
With harassment, you could have annoying someone and it does cause distress for the victim as well, but it could be like a neighbourly dispute over land or something like that. But with stalking, it's like real deep and psychological abuse as well.
Yeah.
It's a lot more sadistic and it's more calculated. I do think it's just on another level. And the terms are used interchangeably. But I do think in the early stages of stalking, you could call a lot of it harassment. But once it escalates to someone actually going out of their way to follow you and sit outside your house and go to your work, you know, that needs to be recognised as what it is, and we need to start calling it stalking.
So were the guards kind of saying to you, look, there's nothing we can do because there, like you said, there's no stalking legislation?
Yeah, like see in England, they have stalking protection orders. So say if the time that he showed up in the bush with the eyebrows and the hair and the beard shaved, if I was over in England and that had happened, I would be able to go into a Garda station and say, or a police station and say, look, I think this person is stalking me. I'd like to get a stalking protection order. I'm not sure on the full process, but you don't have to go through the court system.
Right.
They'll be handed a stalking protection order then. And they said, look, this person believes that you're stalking them. There's conditions. And then if you break any of those conditions, they can be charged with stalking then. So I think we just need to look at the system as a whole and see how can we intervene in the early stages. Because at the minute, the only way that we can intervene at the early stages is having the awareness there and informing people of when to report and knowing to, you know, hold on to text messages if it's text messages you're getting, or letters and evidence and things like that, and making an incident log. So if you're noticing a pattern, because stalking it's a pattern of obsessed, fixated, unwanted behaviour that causes distress to the victim. So it's being able to find that pattern and prove that pattern that will help with the guards being able to take action against the stalker.
Yeah. And do you, when you think about that day, like, have you been able to, I know you said you got counselling and things, come to terms with what happened that day? Or do you wonder, you know, what if this had have happened?
Yeah, you do that a lot, but I suppose I gained a new appreciation for my life. And before this happened, I would have been anxious about other things. Whereas now I'm like, what was I worried about that for? You know,
yeah,
there's other things that I could be worried about. So it did change my outlook on life for the better in some ways. And I was very lucky to come out of it alive.
God, that is so much to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about meeting Una. What point of the story does Una make an appearance?
So, God, it was only a few months ago, really. I was in work and someone sent me an article. I think it was my mum, and I went into it and, like, I couldn't believe what I was reading. Like, it was not completely similar, but there was a lot of similarities, yeah, in our cases. And as soon as I read it, I just burst out crying. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe another person has gone through this. I just wanted to get in contact with her immediately because I'd been doing quite well at that point as well. It does come in waves. Sometimes I'll take a couple of bad weeks. But at that point, I was like, yeah, look, I was in good spirits and I just wanted to talk to her. And, you know, I remembered what I was feeling at that time, and she was just going through the sentencing. And I was like, God, that was a really dark period for me. So I'd love to talk to her and tell her it does get better. And,
yeah,
you know. And even just to talk about our experiences, because as I said there, that we're the only ones that will really know what it feels like and, you know, the things that can keep you up at night. So it was the Ryan Tuberty Show had contacted me before, but at that time I didn't feel comfortable coming out about it publicly. But someone had left their number there, so I rang them and said, look, you hardly have contact details for Una. And they did. They sent on my details to Una, and she rang me that evening. We were on the phone for over an hour just talking about our experiences. And yeah, it was heartbreaking to hear her story, but at the same time it was great that we then had each other as a support network to be able to discuss this about. And yeah, at the end of the call we both said we'd love to do something to help other victims. And because, you know, we were like given off about there not being a law, and we were saying, like, there's not even a website that you can go to look for support. And any of the websites that we did find, they were all based in countries abroad, but they were really, like, dark and scary. It had a picture of a man in a hood looking behind a corner, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just yeah, discussed a few things. And she told me about a service that the IPS, the Irish Prison Service, provide that would give me his approximate release date, and that would let me know if he's been moved prisons or if he has to be out for a day to go to the hospital or anything. Now, I never heard of that beforehand. It was only her telling me
that helped
me find out about it. So I was talking to someone there, and then they put me in contact with someone higher up, and I was kind of not giving off, but I was like, you know, it's not fair on victims that, like, it's mad that these services are there and that I didn't know about it. And he said, look, it is kind of a grey area with GDPR, but we are looking for ways to bridge that gap. And he said, I know someone that you might be interested in talking to. Her name is Ruth Maxwell. She does a lot of work with victim advocacy and stuff. So he passed on my number to Ruth, and yeah, Ruth rang and she told me about her experience. She was walking to work back in 2016 and a man came up behind her and he tried to slit her throat with a knife, but she managed to grab the knife and she survived it, and she's so strong now today, and ever since has just been helping. Well, she's helped me, pointed me in the right direction a couple of times. And she was just brilliant. You know, she set up Zoom meetings with the Law Reform Commission for us. She introduced us to the Sexual Violence Centre in Cork, who have been the wind behind our wings for this whole thing. And the likes of Declan Daly, the Chief Superintendent, Head of Protective Services. You know, she's made great contacts for us and helped us on our journey loads. I actually met her there last week for the first time. Aww. As well, which is great.
Emotional, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Because she's helped us so much. And then, yeah, we had a meeting. There was a couple of us in on it. And Mary Curley from the Sexual Violence Centre in Cork took particular interest in our case. And ever since. They've been so supportive. They've helped us build the website. They've guided us through, you know, who we should be contacting, who, you know, when we should make moves and what media to go with, and has just, so yeah, been so supportive for the whole thing. We wouldn't have been able to get as much work as we've gotten done without them. Like at the minute, Senator Lisa Chambers as well has put a bill to, it's going through the bill's office now at the minute to get approved, but hopefully that it would be to enact a stalking law in Ireland. And yeah, that's just really, really exciting. Hopefully we have a petition going on at the minute as well. So we're hoping to get 10,000 signatures before that gets to the government. So
what is the petition for this law?
Yeah, for
support for this law.
Yeah, for the government to enact a specific stalking law in Ireland.
And where can people sign that?
On our website, stalking.ie. You'll
okay.
find it there. Yeah, or on any of our social medias. I think it's in the bios.
So is that senator putting forward this law because of yourself and Una?
Yeah, yeah, which is great. She contacted us and set up a Zoom, and you know, she came back to us with the first draft, and we were kind of like, we have a few changes.
Good for you.
Yeah, herself. She went away with a law. It was Catherine O'Sullivan, I think. She'd be the chairperson of the Sexual Violence Centre, and she's a law lecturer as well. So. I think they worked on it together, and they've done a second draft now, and that's going to be submitted. Because one thing that I think in England as well, within the law, it says that there's like persistent contacting. But for me, I was never contacted or spoken to directly. So I think it's really important that that grey area doesn't get left out of it. So
if this law comes in, then what will change?
So stalking will be recognised as a crime, which it should be, you know. And as of 2020, the harassment bill was like the sentencing was increased to 10 years. So in England, that's what it is for stalking as well. So it would be great if we could have a 10-year sentence for that as well. And then hopefully down the line, we could do something like England's done that's brought in the stalking protection orders.
Yeah.
I think another bill as well, another area that's been overlooked is surveillance. A woman emailed me and said that her ex-husband has a tracking device attached to her car. And then I was looking into that, and it's not illegal to do that. She had gone and reported that, but she was told, well, there's actually, that's not a crime. So that's another area that, you know, recording people, you know, secret cameras and stuff like that. I do think down the line that's something that could be looked at, but yeah, again, just for that bill to come in, even just for victims to have that validation, and for it to be named as a crime in court, and so that people can be charged with what they've done.
There's so much work to be done.
Yeah.
It's so amazing what you're doing. You know, you're putting yourself out there. You've been through so much. There is not one person that would expect you to go out and tell your story and to campaign for this reform, but you're doing that. Does that empower you? Does that make you feel strong?
Thanks. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, definitely. It's given me my power back in a way I didn't realise was there. You know, being able to turn something so awful into something that might help. Because me and Una have said from the start, if us doing this means that we can help just one person, it means it's worth it. You know, we want to be there because it's unfortunate that me and Una didn't know each other at the time of what was going on, and we didn't have each other to talk to. But, you know, we're glad now that we have the website and we have our email so that people can reach out and talk to us, because, God, I think it would have made the world of difference if there was someone I could have contacted at the time for advice.
Do you think about 2023?
All the time, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I was told the date once and I just didn't. You know, I'm so forgetful with things like with dates and stuff. Birthdays I can never remember, but that day it was told to me once and I've never forgot it, because I don't know what lies in store for me from then. You know, we've lifted the lid off the issue a bit and we're starting to see how widespread this actually is. We're hoping to do some research now soon so we can gather some national statistics, because there is none.
There is no national statistics.
Not for stalking, no. So we're you know, Mary from the Sexual Violence Centre is going to work with UCC and try and get the ball rolling on that, because suppose we need to have those statistics behind us, especially when if we're pushing for the law to come through.
I'm so looking forward to seeing where you and Una go with this. I will support it in any way that I can. Again, we're encouraging people to go and sign the petition, because this work that you're doing is so important.
Thank you. Thanks.
I'm wishing you all the best of luck in the world, and thank you so much for today.
Oh, thanks for coming down and having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Lloyd's Pharmacy. The Good Glow Wellness Programme is now online, based around my pillars of self-care. This online course is a guide to better holistic health. For a limited time, the course is down from 85 to 69 euro, and you can head over to thegoodglow.ie for more information. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review, and I'll see you next week.